Have you ever felt like you're in a dead-end job or feel unsure of the next steps to take in your career? Maybe you've been curious to know what it might be like to live and work in another country. Well, meet this week's podcast guest, Sam, a VR enthusiast and traveler that packed his carry-on bags and headed to China on a whim to teach English. Not once, not twice, but three times. Unsure of what his next steps would be after university, Sam left the comforts of his home in England to embrace the life of living abroad. He shares with us some hilarious and bizarre situations he found himself in and details some things to consider if you're looking to make a change. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. So Sam, welcome to the Carry On Bags Only podcast.
Thanks for having me.
For everybody that doesn't know, I actually met Sam back in 2017, and I discovered that Sam actually has some pretty insane travel stories, especially from when he lived abroad teaching English in China. So he did have a blog that he let me read to get some context of his time living in China and teaching, and he has some pretty hilarious and crazy stories. Sam, my first question for you is, what made you decide to teach English in China?
Honestly, like nothing made me decide to do it. So it was kind of a weird roundabout way how I got to going there. I just graduated uni in, it must have been like 2008. I honestly can't remember the year. Moved back to my sort of home village, I guess, like living with my parents. And I was applying for jobs, like graduate jobs and stuff. And I think I got one like good interview for a good position. Didn't get the job. And then I was like, oh, man, like, I don't know what to do. And then I was just looking randomly for jobs on Gumtree, which is like the English equivalent of Craigslist. Like, just, I mean, you know what Craigslist is like. It's not where you go for like a serious job almost. And so I was on that. It just had this ad for like teach English in China. And I was like, oh man, like screw it. I'm just going to do that. I'm just going to kind of see. I'm like, this, why not? Like, I've got nothing to lose. So I sent the email, I sent the reply, and that was like a sort of Monday. And Tuesday, they kind of got back to me like, oh yeah, like, you know, we'd like to do an interview with you. So then Wednesday, I had this, you know, kind of Skype interview with the guy who was the director of this company. Thursday, I was kind of just, you know, nothing. Friday, they were like, yeah, cool, you got the job. You're going to China in 5 weeks. Like, I'd just gone from nothing, like just in my bedroom, like, oh, whatever, like to like, yeah, you're going to go teach in China. And there was no previous thought to specifically look for China. It was just, you know, when you're on like Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace or whatever, and it's like, oh, like free TV stand. And you're like, oh, that's cool. Like that, I could use that. Like, why not? And it was that kind of same sort of thing. I was like, oh, I'll just see like what this is about. And yeah, so it went from Monday, just like Sam's normal life. And then to Friday, like, you're teaching in China in 5 weeks. So I was dating a girl at the time. We've been together for like 3 years. And I was just suddenly like, oh, I'm going to China in 5 weeks. She was like, what? Like, where's this come from? And I was like, I don't know. I just saw the ad. And anyway, like, I sort of realized, like, as I was going further, like, as the deadline was, you know, like weeks away, it kind of dawned on me, like, I don't want to do this right now. Like, this, as cool and as crazy as it sounds, this is way too soon. Like 5 weeks is mental. Like, it's not going to work. And I kind of made up all these excuses, like, well, you know, I'm in this band, and you know, I kind of want to give the band a shot and stuff like that. And anyway, I emailed the guy. The guy's name is Chris. He ran this. It was just his own, you know, company he'd done, and he lived out there in China. And I emailed him like, look, this does sound amazing, but it's just way too soon. Like, I can't come this year, you know, in 3 weeks, I'm afraid. And he was like, hey, like, totally understandable, I get it. We'll keep you in mind for next year. And that kind of really planted the seed. That's what I guess started this whole thing in motion. And so then I kind of carried on going back into the cycle of like, oh, I'm just going to look for jobs. I ended up going back to work at my old supermarket job that I had when I was 16, and I was like 22 at this point. I kind of did that for 3 months, and I was like, this is like not progress. I feel like, you know, every kind of graduate, you know, to some degree, they kind of go through this, just like self-doubt, you know, unless you like fall into a job straight after university. Or, you know, I mean, I guess I wasn't so proactive in kind of doing the job search. I was just glad to be done with university. And yeah, so I did like supermarket work for 3 months. Then I like worked on a bar for 3 months. And then I was like, it was a weird year. Like, I did like temp jobs. And then I was like doing geotechnical work, basically a geotechnical engineer. And it was during that geotech job that I was like, I'm not enjoying this. I want to go to China, you know, kind of look at that again. So I sent them a message, like kind of, maybe it was like March, early on in the year. And I was just like, I want to do this. When are you recruiting teachers? And so kind of started the process then. had like way more lead time this time around, obviously, because it wasn't, you know, 5 weeks away. It was more like 6 months away. And yeah, like then it kind of just from there, I sort of got everything ready. I still left it to the last minute. Like I didn't book my flight first year until like literally the flight left 13 hours after I bought the ticket. So like, and I knew I was going on that date. Because that was like the date that the kind of group had organized. It was just like one of those things. Like it was one thing after another when I first went, you know, to go out to get the visa and stuff, you have to have like a sponsorship from a school and all this sort of thing. So I sent them copies of my passport. And it's like, it's quite strict in China in terms of how they don't just hand out the work visa. On the school's part or the employer's part over there, it's quite a lot of work. And I think it costs them quite a bit of money. So they're like, they really want to like make sure you can go. And yeah, like these guys, the school sent me my visa and, you know, kind of opened it up and like immediately was like, well, this is wrong. Like they put my birthday like the wrong way around. In order for them to correct it, I had to send them the thing they'd already issued me. Like I had to send that back because the bureau in China couldn't issue a second document. They were like, you've already used that ticket. Like you have to send it back first. It took like 5 weeks for me to get that. And there was maybe 6 weeks before I left, 5 weeks before I left. So I sent them all that back. Then they like applied for another visa and all this stuff. And I like was going through the visa office in London, like the Chinese embassy. I got my visa the day before the flight left, like literally the day before. I was in London. I like had to get the train in the morning, go to this go to the visa company, just pick it up, and just like went straight home. And I was like, right, now I've got a pack. Yeah, that's kind of how I got there. Sorry, that was a massive tangent. Like what made me decide to go? Nothing made me decide to go. Like I think just like boredom and just like the fear of just working in a supermarket for the rest of my life. Like, yeah, it was just kind of weird coincidence. It could have been anywhere. Like it could have been like Nepal. It could have been, you know, South America. It just happened to be China. And I think for me, the appeal was like, well, I literally know nothing. I know nothing about China. Like back then I knew I didn't know how to say hello. I hated eating Chinese food in England. Like I never had a Chinese takeaway. Probably the most like alien place I can think of. That's kind of where I have to go. Just somewhere that I have no preconceived ideas about. Like, and that was kind of it. And then yeah, the rest is history.
So the crazy part is that you didn't just go to China once to teach. You went there twice.
Yeah, no, I didn't just go once. I went twice. So I had my first year. Going back for the second year, that was a really like quite a tough decision because it was tough and it was easy. Like while I was back, the year works on, you know, the school term. So like you'd kind of work September till like June and then you basically have the summer holidays on. So I flew home in the summer holidays. And while I was back after my first year, I had an interview with a company in England. And bear in mind, I was like 23, 24. Like, yeah, they offered me the job and it was a really amazing job. And the pay was amazing. So like I would have been on more pay. If had I taken that job, I would have been more pay than I kind of would ever have been in my life. But I just knew like I kind of had to go back. And it was tough because had I taken that job, it would have been all about like, you know, kind of supply chain ethics and stuff. So I would have got to go and like revisit China in like a kind of a work capacity, you know, to like literally like go to kind of factories and stuff and do all this like evaluation. But yeah, I ended up turning that down because I was like, I just need to have another year in that country. I think part of the reason was because I absolutely loved my first year. Like I had such a good time. But there was also part of me felt like I missed out in my first year, I was put in a, like you didn't get to choose your placement. You just kind of got given the school you were going to go to. And, you know, the first week over there, you know, you meet all the other foreign teachers, you know, basically just a load of English guys and girls that were going to teach. And so we all met in this group. We had this kind of induction week and you make some like, you know, really good friendships with the people you meet there. Like, you know, I'm still in touch with loads of those guys now, like sang at some of their weddings and stuff and all this sort of thing. And they all got placed in like the big city, I guess. It was a city called Changsha, which is the capital city of Hunan province. And it's probably about, in terms of everyone's Chinese geography, it's about 2 hours away from Wuhan. They were all placed in Changsha and it was like a big city, you know, like, I don't know what, I can't remember the population was. It was like 4 million people or something in the kind of collective area. Whereas the town I was in my first year was this tiny little town called Jishou, which, I mean, it was 500,000 people, which in the, like, it was a big city in, you know, in reference to anywhere else. But in like the scheme of Chinese cities, it was quite small. And I was one of maybe 10 foreign teachers in the whole town. And I think part of me felt like I kind of missed out, like not being in the big city. Like in hindsight, I didn't at all, because my first year was like really what kind of gave me the grounding to sort of, you know, learn as much Chinese as I did and just have a bit more of a kind of immersive Chinese experience. Like, because I wasn't just hanging around with foreign people the whole time. You know, I was like, most of my friends were Chinese guys and girls, like, you know, just kids from the university, or like I had a friend that ran a music shop out there, and it was really cool. Like, but that's why I went back for the second year. I kind of wanted round two to sort of experience the big city lifestyle out there, I guess, for a year. And one of my mates from first year went back as well. So it was kind of an easy decision in the end, but yeah, I think it was the right one.
That's good, because judging by from what you've said about turning down this other job that would have paid really well and set you up, but you were just, you know, at that point in your life where you weren't ready for that. You just wanted to experience more of what you had done with the teachings. It's kind of cool to hear that, and that you have no regrets, that you, in hindsight, looking back at it, still think that that was a good decision to do round two.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'd be here now had I not gone back. Yeah, and done all that stuff. So
one of the things that you had written in the blog, which I found interesting, is what you taught. So you were saying that you taught business English. You also did aviation services, which I found very bizarre. I'm like, what? I don't know if you remember, but you talked about it and the type of students that were coming through your class and just where their experience levels were at.
Yeah. So my first year, I just taught middle school kids, basically. They were great. And as well, the kind of the difficult thing was, you're just like a foreign teacher. You're just like such a novelty. Things could get a bit like unruly, because, you know, you wouldn't have, the schools didn't have the resources to have someone sit in all your classes. Like, some of my friends did have that, and the kids would just, you know, they would behave as if they were a Chinese teacher in the class. But when it was like, you know, foreign English class, it's like the equivalent of like, you know, PE class or something, like back home, where you're just like, this is kind of just a bit of a goof now. Like, we're just going to like doss around for a bit. Not really, like, none of this really matters. And you would get that every now and again, and it would kind of get a bit frustrating. But that was just middle school kids. And also, like, fair enough, they're literally being taught by a kid themselves. Like, I mean, I was, what, 22, 23, like, really mature enough to be in charge of a whole class. But the second year was, they were older students. Yeah, it was at this vocational college. And then the flight one, it was called like cabin studies. So basically they were learning how to be a flight attendant. And obviously one part of that, you know, if you want to be on the bigger airlines, is you've got to learn how to speak English. And so, yeah, it was a weird mix, because the business English students were business focused. They were like, right, this is what I want to study. And their grasp of English was better. They like wanted to learn, you know, how to say things in English, and they already had quite a kind of good foundation. So you could teach a whole class in English and they would generally understand all of it. And then you go to the aviation studies class, and those guys just didn't care. It was like an older version of the middle school teaching. And yeah, I mean, fair enough. They were kind of like the glamorous kids who were just like, I just got to like be at college to do one thing. And, you know, I guess it's going to be this, and it's going to hang out with my mates. And so, like, again, my class like didn't matter. But what was funny about that was they were still interested, because you were like this, you know, you're like a foreign guy, right? And so they would still be interested in kind of like what you had to say, but it was more driven by what they wanted to know. And as well, that age group, they'd always be like, oh, Sam, do you have a girlfriend? And then that would be like, they would just be like obsessed with anything along that kind of topic line. And they'd always ask like, do you go drink at the bar and all this sort of thing? And you'd be like, okay, like how do you kind of answer these questions to like a class that you're supposed to be teaching? But yeah, it was like definitely a weird mix. And it kind of made it difficult, because I would like plan one lesson a week. Again, this was like, you know, me kind of just being an immature, like lazy teacher, I guess. So I plan one lesson and be like, no, that's what I'm teaching everyone. Like, really, I should have probably done more than one lesson for the different courses. So like business English studies, you know, they would kind of generally be fairly receptive to it. And the aviation, like the cabin studies guys, just, yeah, they wouldn't really care. They were just like, all right, man, like, we don't want to be here. like half the time they'd just be falling asleep. Yeah, so it was quite a kind of different mix of courses. And like, again, it wasn't something I had any control over. They were just like, this is your, you know, your schedule for the year.
And, did you have to, like, when they give you like this course to teach, do they give you any resources to use, or do you have to kind of do your own research to figure out kind of what your topics are going to be each week?
First year they did, they gave me like a book. Yeah. Like a little kind of, I think it was written by one of the teachers. Actually, they got me to help them write the book. This one teacher, she was like, can you help me proofread it and stuff? And so that was kind of the book that they used, like grade 7 and grade 8. They had this little English kind of workbook, and that helped a lot because I'd have the topics and then I knew everyone would have the book. And then I kind of just like expand a bit. But then, yeah, the second year, like at the college, they were just like, just teach them, you know, whatever. So I had to plan like a lot of my own. Like everything I planned was just kind of, you know, what I thought would be a good subject. But there's a lot of resources though. There's a load of websites for, you know, teaching English. And yeah, it really helped, like all those kind of online forums and stuff. But yeah, like it was more just like, I'll try and teach them about stuff that I would have liked to learn about. Because I mean, the goal is to like teach them English, but you don't want to be patronizing and be like, this is, you know, ABCs. And at the same time, they knew more about the kind of technicalities of the language than I did at times. They'd be like, this is like the subjugative clause of like, and I'd be like, man, like, I don't even know these like terms in it. Like, I just know, like, and I don't think a lot of people do. Like, as someone who has English as, you know, their mother tongue, like, I think we don't need to know a lot of like the reasons behind why things are the way they are.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, these students, like, and in China as well, one way they teach is like purely repetition based. It was kind of, things like that would be quite frustrating to deal with every now and again, because it was just like they would just repeat things over and over again. So it was all kind of this almost like robotic repetition of, you know, of like the alphabet or like a kind of an expression or something like that. So like for example, I would go into a class and every day, you know, be like, good morning guys, and they'd be like, good morning Mr. Teacher or whatever, was morning Samu, and then I'd be like, how are you? And then just all the time, there was never any difference. The response was always like, I'm fine, thanks, and you? And like, that's what they're taught, like that's how you reply to the question, how are you? And it was just like, they obviously, you know, had learned all the kind of technical side of stuff. Yeah, when you just speak the language, you don't really think about why things are the way they are. And English is a crazy language as well. Like when you speak to people who don't have it as their you know, their first language, they're like, this language is, because there's so many different, you know, pronunciations of the same kind of, the same words and the same, I mean, you know what it's like. Like, it's, yeah, just, it's, I can imagine it's a nightmare for people to learn. So yeah, like they knew a lot of stuff about things that I didn't know about. And then it was hard for me to be like that's right or wrong, because I just didn't know. I was like, that's not something, I've never had to deal with like that side of my own language. And yeah, it was odd. Like they just kind of, they would want reasons to, you know, sort of things, or they'd want the pattern. And yeah, a lot of the time in English there isn't one. So I would just kind of, I would more just try and teach them what would be like, what, at least what I thought might be an interesting topic. I've probably got my old lesson plan somewhere. I should have dug them up for this, but yeah, the one that always brings, it'd be things like horoscopes or something, right? Like star signs. And I was like that, I don't know, like, at least I was like, this is like maybe not the most important thing in the language you're going to need to speak, but it was just like, this is like maybe a bit more engaging, like, content wise. But as a result, it would also mean that I learned a lot of Chinese for like really obscure things.
Yeah.
Because I was like, okay, I know they're not going to know like how to say, like they're not going to understand this certain expression. So I would learn the Chinese for it, and I'd be like, I think this is this, and I would say like, is it this? And they'd be like, oh yeah, we understand that. And I'd be like, well, okay, this is in English, you know, that's just that in Chinese. But yeah, as a result, it meant I learned all this like really obscure stuff. Like I know the Chinese for like Greek myths. I can say that in Chinese, because like I did a lesson one time on like Greek myths, and I think that one didn't go down well at all. They were just like, we don't care, man, like we've got our own like myths and stuff, like,
yeah.
But yeah, like just really obscure stuff, like how to say, like Halloween lessons were always funny, like like learn like how, I learned how to say vampire, and just like random stuff like that. Like, but yeah, you kind of had free reign to sort of teach them what you wanted, which was kind of cool.
Would you encourage other people if they, you know, are in the similar boat where they, you know, are just coming out of school and looking for something to do?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I think I still look back as, you know, China was two of the best years of my life that I've had so far. Like, it was just so, it was so different. And it was quite scary at times, just kind of making that leap. But it really, it made me just so much more independent, I guess. It sounds really cliche, but like, it really did. It helped me just kind of like figure things out, just like, because I had to. You know, yeah. It wasn't like, oh, it was just like random stuff. Like getting a gym membership was suddenly like the like challenge of the week, because it's like, how, like, where do I go? And like, how do I figure this out? Like opening a bank account and, you know, buying, just getting the train station and just like all this stuff. And it was just like constant daily, like problem solving. But at the same time, you're immersed in a different culture, and that can only broaden your horizons. Like it was just, and you know, that's kind of why I'm in Canada now. I think when I went back to England, I was like, I mean, China was cool, and I was back in England, I was like, this is, you know, it's nice being at home, but home's always going to be there. That's kind of how I see it. Like, England is always going to be home. And so I've been in Canada now the last 4.5 years, and it's weird, I still kind of feel like I'm on holiday sometimes. Like, it still doesn't, you know, at the end of it, I could be like, ah, well, screw it. I'm just going to kind of sack all this off and sell my stuff and move back home. There'd be no point in that, because I've got like, I would have to start again from square one, going back to England, you know. But like, it's kind of always there in the back of my mind, like, you know, which is weird because I've never had that anywhere else. China definitely felt like a holiday. I think because I was like, I know I'm not going to like settle down in China. That's not to say that you can't do it. Like, a lot of my friends out there, there's like quite a big South African community in the city I was in. So I was friends with loads of South Africans, and man, those guys are like, they're getting married, they're having kids. So they're like, their kids are in like Chinese preschool and stuff. And it's really cool because they've just like built their life now in China. They just decided like it was like one big group of, you know, like friends, I think, all from South Africa. And they're like, man, like, this isn't, I don't think things were kind of looking too bright in terms of how they saw their future just panning out in South Africa, so they all just moved over to China. For me, it's cool because I know there's always someone I can go back to and kind of still have a connection there, right?
Yeah, I think with traveling, it's always something that I recommend to people, because I think when you're forced to be immersed in, you know, a different place, you learn different things about yourself, other people, how you manage, you know, situations.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of throws you a lot of curveballs, and especially somewhere like, I mean, for me, I feel like China is a very, very kind of crazy place. If you're not knowing what to expect, which I wasn't, but I think the beauty of my position was I went out knowing like, this is going to be crazy. Like, you've just got to take whatever comes at you as it is. So there was no like expectation that I had no, like I said, like I didn't know how to speak any Chinese. I didn't know like what food to eat. I remember the first morning after landing in China. So, you know, we all landed. Then I think we went to like the bar or something for the first evening. And it was just crazy the first night there. Like, it was like, we honestly felt like celebrities or something. Cause you just, it's just this group of like 20 foreigners in a club. And it was quite a kind of local town that we were doing this orientation in. And so everyone was just like, oh my God, you know, all the locals were like, oh my God, like, what's going on? Like, this is the coolest thing. People just buying us drinks and just like, just being really polite, like really welcoming. And then I remember, so the next day, you know, woke up and we were kind of in the hostel or whatever, but they'd like booked out a load of rooms in the hotel, I think it was. And I woke up kind of hungover, and as well, like, just like the smell, like, it was, so where I was in Hunan, they're like, they have this like delicacy, and it's called stinky tofu. And it's, I mean, you know how like you have cheese and like supposedly the older a cheese, like the more it tastes amazing. Like, I don't know how much I buy into any of that. And it was the same with tofu. Like, they had this tofu that was basically just like fermented or like rotten tofu, and it stank, like it absolutely stank. And there was this, I didn't know what it was at first. And this is the thing, like, it's like quite a bit of a head trip for the first, you know, the adjustment period, because you don't know what anything is. And it's kind of like being in a bit of a nightmare where you just there's stuff that's going on and you're like, I don't know what that is. And like, and you have no frame of reference to like, to pinpoint it to anything. So every morning in this hotel, you know, I would wake up and it would just be this noise. And it was just this like, and it was just this like on repeat. And I was like, what is that? Like, is that a guy? Like, I didn't know what it was. I thought it was like a bird. And I was like, I don't know what this thing is. And it reeked. And it turned out like it was like, the more time we spent there, the more you'd see these like guys on their little, on like a trike, I guess. And they'd have their kind of their kitchen bit on the back of the you know, the bike thing. And they would have these little like speaker boxes. And they would just press play on the speaker. And literally all it was like the guy's voice or, you know, whatever, just saying like, I've got tofu. And it was something like, chow tofu or something. And it was just going like stinky tofu. So it'd be like walking around town. Like, I can't even think now in Canada what they would have like a street vendor selling. It would be like if you go to the Mexican food stand.
Yeah.
And they're just like, we got burritos like the whole time. Like, you wouldn't, you know, it'd be like that. Like, and it was just this guy on his bike, just having this thing just press and play, and it was just like stinky tofu like all morning, and it was just on repeat. And I had no, because I didn't know what stinky tofu was, and I just didn't understand the like that was a thing where they like sing almost and just shout this like product that they're selling. And I didn't know what the smell was either, and I was like, what, like what is going on? And it was like, it turned out he would just park up like in the alley, like right next to where our hotel was.
Yeah.
And so you just hear it through the window every morning, like 6, 7 a.m. And it was one of those things. So I just woke up. It's like, and it as well, I never tried this stuff. It smelled really bad. Like, it stank as well. And it was like, you'd wake up. I heard that. And I was like, I don't know what's going on. And you'd just be, it was like 30 degrees and you're really hot. You're kind of confused. And they took us like to this, just to like a noodle bar. And I remember this like really vividly, like even now, I remember like where I was sat, and like just like the kind of a little restaurant we were in. And this was my first morning in China. And it was like, you know, we were getting breakfast and I was like, oh, like, you know, I was used to having like a full English fry up like every day, like bacon, hash browns, eggs, beans, you know, sausages, whatever, like just kind of... Yeah. Standard Western, you know, English breakfast. And then that, obviously they don't, you can't get that really like where we were. Like, it's not, you know, you can find it, but it's not like, it's not the Chinese, it's not the like the kind of Asian diet. Like, so I asked the guys who were leading the trip, I was like, what are you getting? And they're like, oh, we're just gonna get this. And I was like, yeah, can you just order me that, please? And they bring it over, basically it was like a bowl of like beef noodles or something. And I was just like, oh, man, like, this sucks. Like, I'm eating like noodles for breakfast, which is like weird. Like, I've never done that. Like, and I remember sitting there thinking, being like, you've got this for a year now, Sam. Like, this is breakfast for a year. And just kind of being, you know, a bit internally just like, oh, what have I done? But yeah, it was weird. Like, it was kind of one of those things where you just sort of, you just have to be open to it. You just have to just go with it. And yeah, like, I'm so glad I did, because it just kind of makes you like solve these problems. And a lot of the time it's problems that you would never have to face, you know, in the comfort of your own home country. Like, mm-hmm. You know, I think you take for granted language as one, just being able to communicate with people and they understand you. And so over there, it's just like, man, it was a whole different, and this was before like Google Translate on your phone, you could just ping something up. Like, it was, I just had to learn words and just figure stuff out.
When you came back from China, I know you talked about it a little bit in your blog and how weird it was, kind of come back into the Western culture. So like, when you came back, were you like, man, I really miss the beef noodle breakfast?
There were things I did miss. I missed, I guess, almost vainly. So I missed kind of standing out. The thing I found really weird when I came back to England was just like being anonymous again. Like, just kind of being no one again. Because, you know, in China, I got so used to every day, like, people just staring at you. You're like, it was like all the time, you kind of, you know, you'd walk down the street and you could say like, oh, you just ignore it. Like, but you can ignore it, but you still notice it. And you know, so even if I just walked down to the supermarket, the top of the street where I live, it was like a 10-minute walk. And, you know, you countless times you'd walk past people and they would just say like, oh, look, a foreign guy. Like, that was just kind of what they would say. Like, hey, there's a foreign guy there. And like, some people get annoyed by it, but like, I don't know, you just that was just part of living in China. So you just hear like, oh, Laowai, like that's how they say it. And you'd hear it all the time. So you're kind of almost like tuned into it. And so when I went back to England, just like, you're just nothing again. You're just like, you don't, no one cares. And not that anyone really cared in China. Like, it was just, you were kind of this novelty. And it was kind of fun, like just sort of, yeah, having that that thing that makes you stand out in a way. Like, I mean, like, again, that's maybe partly why I sort of, in Canada, I kind of, I don't know, it's, you know, it's kind of, it's not the same, but it's like, you know, like out here, I'm like, I'm the English guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess in Kitsilano, that's not that much of a new thing. Brit Solano. But yeah, like, I don't know, like it was weird. I found it kind of difficult to, I don't want to say difficult to readjust, you know, it's not like I was sort of in a war and came back and I was like kind of having like anything, you know, issues like getting back to normal life. But it was like, it was just odd. Yeah. Kind of going from this, like I say, this almost like permanent holiday mode to like, just like suddenly snap back into real life again. Yeah. It was a bit weird.
Yeah. No, I think it's cool that you did that. And I know you had mentioned that it wasn't really something that, you know, you were thinking about, but growing up, like living abroad, was that ever on your radar or did that kind of open up because of going to China, being more open to that idea?
Yeah, I think China really opened that up. In a way, it sort of ruined home a bit because it was, like I say, it was weird going back and just kind of having to sort of get used to just like normal life again. And I spent maybe 18 months in England after I got back from China and then came out to Canada. There are a few other reasons behind that. Like, you know, I met an American girl in my last like 3 months of my second year. And then we were dating, you know, like we were doing long distance. I actually went back a third time.
You went back three times to China.
Yeah. I never got around to putting that in the blog. Like I stopped the blog. So I went back three times. But I really only had like two like proper years because the third time I went back was kind of this, me and my girlfriend at the time, we were dating for the last like 3 months that I was in Changsha. And then, yeah, it kind of got to the end of our placements, you know, it was like June time or something. And we were both going home and it was just like, it didn't feel right. Like it didn't feel like our relationship should have ended then. We did a long distance and then we kind of just decided like we should go back to China. Like we tried finding somewhere that was, you know, like basically like another school job, I guess. And we did. We went back to another city called Shenzhen, which is like just north across the border from Hong Kong. And that spot's a bit of a strange one as well because you've got Hong Kong, which is very... It's almost like London in Asia. I've never been, but you know, that's kind of what I've been told. It's almost like, you know, you've kind of got just this, you know, they've got like London taxi style cars and stuff. And yeah, it's just this cool city that's very, like, very heavily influenced by, you know, British culture. It's in Asia. And then just across the border, you've got Shenzhen, which is like mainland China. And the two are just like, they're so wildly different from what I've been told. It was weird. Like we went back for... supposed to do a third year, but again this is where like kind of travel just throws a problem your way. And it turned out the company we were kind of working with, they didn't really want to get us like the right visas and stuff like that, and it just didn't work out. Like we were just like, all right, we're gonna we decided we were gonna go, so we kind of made this like midnight dash and left and got the ferry. We said like, and it was, yeah, that was a whole other thing. Like, yeah, it just wasn't as good. Like, I think the second year that I had was like a really perfect setup. I think I worked like 16 hours a week. And the rest of the time I just had to myself and I could kind of, you know, I could do a lot more exploring and I could kind of just go off and, you know, like see the city and just kind of do all the things I sort of felt like I'd missed out on doing in my first year. So I joined a band in my second year. I played drums in like a Chinese hardcore punk band, which was nuts. It was like me and, you know, four Chinese guys, and like one of them could speak English, but like we got by, like, you know, we could communicate. My Chinese was okay by that point. And yeah, it was just nuts. Like that's when I went to Wuhan. Like we played, it was weird actually, we played a show with a Vancouver band. Have you heard of DOA?
No, I don't.
They're like an old, like old school punk, yeah, just a Vancouver Burnaby band. So their singer, he's a guy called Joe Keithley. He's like a council member or something now in Burnaby, but his nickname is Joey Shithead. Like his punk name is Joey Shithead. And it's like, yeah, it was just super weird. Like, so, I'd never heard of them like before I met them in China. But so, you know, all the guys in my Chinese band were like, oh, like we've got this gig, like this like Canadian band is coming over there, like a kind of a punk legend band. And they're doing a tour of China. And I was like, cool, man. And like, yeah, like let's, yeah, that sounds fun. We'll do the show. So then we got on the bullet train to Wuhan, which was like 3 hours. And it was just, yeah, it was funny. Like it was just kind of, you know, me and these like four punks. And it was just really, it was just weird stuff like that. Like, you know, you'd never do that. Like it just could only have happened to me in China, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a kind of weird coincidence. And then like when I moved to Canada, obviously, I saw that DOA, the band I'd, you know, like supported and, you know, had beers with them in this bar in Wuhan. They were like playing one of the stages in Kitsilano, like when they do that street festival thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the hell, man? Like it's so stupid. Like it's just like weird coincidences like that. But yeah, it was dumb.
That's so wild. That's cool though. And there's like a couple of stories that you had too. And I know I can relate to this, but you talked about even just like getting sick and you had to go to the hospital there too, and how much of an ordeal that was, and just the experience of the hospital system and everything in general. But I have always had a weak stomach, and I try to be adventurous, but I just know like once you've been sick before, it's like you just don't want to be as adventurous because you know that feeling of just eating something and it just not sitting well. But yeah, you were recounting a couple stories of just being sick over there. But you like, are you pretty adventurous and like open to different trying different foods? Like, were you open to it once you were there?
Yeah, it was one of those things. Like, so the stinky tofu stuff aside, like I kind of tried most stuff that they offered us. Things like, I didn't try anything like dog meat, not that I'm aware of anyway. But like, there was one thing me and my it was a guy I lived with. He was like my friend in the first year. We went to help one of our teachers' like friend open his like nursery, and it was like 4 hours away or something, in this town called Longshan, which means like Dragon Mountain, which is a really cool name for a town.
Yeah.
So we went to Dragon Mountain, and like the drive was like 4 hours, and it was just this kind of, you know, sketchy enough driving out there anyway. And then it's like imagining in Canada, you kind of go for, you know, like a 4 hour drive to Vancouver to like Kelowna or something, and you can kind of go one of two highways. They're both kind of sketchy, and it was kind of like that. Like you take this 4 hour drive, like kind of sketchy, windy roads. We had no idea where we were going, and we got there, and they put on like a really nice, a really nice meal for us and stuff, because it's like, you know, you've come all this way to like help us open the thing. And again, it was the whole like, because you're a foreigner, you know, there's kind of like, well, you're this English teacher and you're teaching the kids English, and that's kind of, it's like for the school, it's almost like bragging rights. They can be like, you know, we've got this foreign guy, like he's kind of endorsing us. He's here to, you know, teach lessons on the first opening weekend and stuff. So it was like, you know, it meant a lot to the schools for you to be there. And so they kind of wanted to pay you back. So, you know, they took us to like this they took us to get like a pedicure or something, like a foot massage, yeah, which was nice. And you just kind of sit there and just chill out and have some beers. And then we went for this meal. What did they have? There was this, it was basically like a cow's knuckle, I guess. Like, I don't know, like kind of, I don't know what part of the bone it was or the body, but it was like, almost like a bone just like tied in a knot. And they just gave you that on a plate. And I was like, okay, like, well, what do we do? yeah. And they were like, oh, and then they give you this like plastic straw, you know, you get for those like bubble tea things,
yeah,
like a colored plastic straw. And they give you that. And it's like, okay. And they're like, oh, you put it in the bone and you like, you drink it out. And I was like, okay, of course I'm going to try it. I think part of it was, it wasn't that I was like super keen on trying all this weird stuff. It was more just like my politeness kind of outweighed my reluctance to eat anything. So this one turned out you just had to jam this straw in this like bone knuckle, and then you drank out the bone marrow. And it was, Oh, it's kind of gross. It was like, honestly, it was like kind of drinking like snot or phlegm or something. It was kind of gross. You were just like, ah, oh, dude, like, I don't. And it was like, that was one of the, I've never got it. You know, and some people are like, they're like, oh, I can't eat bananas. I just can't stand the texture. Yeah. And I've never got that. I've never been like, I don't understand how you can't like a texture of a food, how that can be enough to put you off. But this was one of those things where it's like, yeah, like this is not, the texture of this is just like, yeah, just drinking bogeys. And there's another one that like I had, and it was, I was given, I had like, because you have a lot of free time, like this is my first year, like I gave this kid private lessons. And his dad, I think his dad was like quite rich because he owned some like really nice tea house at the end of town. And he had just all these photos of him just traveling around the world. And yeah, he just kind of took us to this really fancy restaurant. And it was like hot pot, which is really good. And, you know, that was like a really nice sort of gesture. But then one of the foods that came in, it was just pig's brain. And I was like, man, like, I don't really want to eat that. But like, you kind of do, just to be polite.
Yeah.
I ate the pig's brain. Again, it was just, that was more like, I know what I'm eating. And I'm just like, I didn't see the point. Like, I'm not too keen on like eating it for the sake of it. But again, it was more like to be polite. It was like things like, everyone would offer you cigarettes. And I don't smoke. And so you just kind of had to figure out a way around it. Like, what do I do? So, you know, one of the kind of early phrases I learned was like, I don't smoke, but like, thank you very much. It was like, it was almost rude to like refuse it. Like someone's like, here's a cigarette. If you're like, no, I don't want it. Like, it's almost kind of a, I guess like a cultural faux pas. Like it's a bit rude to turn it down. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I kind of always accept it and I'd be like, thank you. Like, you know, I'll smoke it later. Like I've just had one. So put it behind my ear and then just kind of, then I think everyone's happy because they're like, oh, cool, man. Like, you know, the foreign guy like took my gift and like, he didn't like throw it back in my face. And then you're like, oh, phew, okay. Like, I don't have to smoke it now. It's like, as well, like the cigarettes there, they just, I mean, they weren't nice. and it's like, honestly, the food was amazing. Like the kind of the weird stuff aside, like we would get, we'd go to like the nightclubs and we wouldn't get back to like sort of 4 or 5 a.m. And then they'd have these just tents just like set up on the pavement. And it was just like a barbecue. Like just, there would just be a guy just set his tent up. There'd be like, you know, 20 tables or something. And then, you know, 5, 6 of us would sit down. We'd order like a box of beers, you know, like kind of, and big beers as well. Like, and you just order a box of beers and then they would just bring you like barbecue over at like 5 a.m. And that was like peak time. They would just be like so busy. Like, and you get this like garlic fried eggplant and stuff. And you get these like little pork kebabs and things and chicken skewers. And it was just like so good. Like the food, I really missed the food.
Hi everyone, it's Kelsey here. I wanted to let you know that there is a part 2 to this episode that will get released at a later date. If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave a review and make sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Until next time, keep calm and carry on.